Welcome back, freaks, to another horror-filled episode of Tombs of Horror. I'm your host, Dustin. Continuing on from the last episode, this is the second batch of terrible fucking sequels that should have never been made and probably shouldn't be watched by anyone, like, ever. So, let's not waste any more time and jump right into it with 1988's horror comedy, Return of the Living Dead, Part 2.
A deadly experiment. A freak accident. A secret that will be carried to the grave as the horror classic. It reborn. Return of the Living Dead, Part 2. Jesse will be the first to know. Billy will be the first to go.
We've got to get out of here. Get to a phone.
Seven of the living against an army of the dead, starved for life.
The first of four sequels in this zombie franchise. Besides the first film, the only one worth watching is Part 3. While this definitely isn't the worst of the sequels, it definitely isn't good. During the zombie outbreak from the previous film, a transport truck carrying barrels of that troublesome trioxin loses one of the barrels when it breaks loose and falls into a river. The next morning, three preteens, Johnny, Billy, and Jesse, go to a mausoleum in their local cemetery for a group initiation to a gang of bullies. Turning pussy, Jesse flees into the nearby sewers where he and the others come across the missing barrel of trioxin. When they open it up, they find a corpse inside and run away screaming. As the trioxin gas escapes from its prison. Later, when Jesse tells the others that he is going to call the number for the military that was on the barrel, the other bullies lock him in the mausoleum and leave him there. Billy and Johnny then go back to the barrel and completely open it. Excuse me, fully releasing the rest of the gas and blasting themselves with it in the process, and the gas then leaks out into the rest of the cemetery. At this point, anyone that has seen the original movie knows that this doesn't bode well for anybody. Anyway, while all this is going on, three grave robbers, Ed, Brenda, and Joey, arrive. Brenda stays in the van while the other two enter the cemetery and begin to loot the mausoleum that Jesse has been trapped in, and Jesse runs out of it and goes back home. As acid rain brought on by the released trioxin begins to fall, it soaks into the ground of the cemetery and it reanimates all the corpses buried in it. After going back home, Jesse goes to Billy's house to check on him, but discovers that Billy has fallen gravely ill due to being blasted with the gas. Billy warns Jesse not to go back to the sewers, but he ignores the warning, goes back, and runs into a shittier version of what I believe to be the Tarman zombie from the first film, which is a corpse they woke up when they opened the trioxin barrel. After his run-in with Tarman, Jesse escapes into the cemetery, where he runs into the newly reanimated zombies coming out of their graves. The ones that are in the mausoleum that Ed and Joey are still inside begin to wake up as well. Ed and Billy, I meant Ed and Joey. Ed and Joey are attacked by one, but Joey smashes it through the head with the crowbar, and they escape. And they escape while running through a massive mob of zombies. The three, looking for help, end up at Billy's house, but they are forced to leave when Billy's dad threatens them with a shotgun. Meanwhile, Jesse has managed to contact the military and has talked to Colonel Glover, who fans will remember helped put down the original outbreak in the previous film. But the call gets disconnected while the two were talking. After this, Ed, Joey, and Brenda barge into Jesse's house, and Joey begins to become sick from trioxin exposure. The zombies that were after those three begin to assault Jesse's house, and while all this shit is going on, Billy, now fully infected by the trioxin, attacks and kills his own mother while a group of zombies eat his father outside. Jesse, his sister, and her boyfriend escape the zombies outside the house, steal a car, and try to find a way to get the fuck out of Dodge. They go to a hospital, and they find Ed, Joey, and Brenda there, and discover that both Ed and Joey are experiencing rigor mortis. Jesse is then attacked by a group of zombies, but is rescued by his sister's boyfriend. Upset about Joey, Brenda grabs him, and they take off in their van, but not before Ed jumps in as well. They are stopped at a gunpoint at a checkpoint by some of Colonel Glover's men, who have arrived in town to try to contain the outbreak. Everything turns to shit when a now fully turned Ed attacks and kills one of the soldiers, causing the rest to flee. A now also fully zombified Joy attacks Brenda, and unable to kill him, Brenda willingly lets Joy eat her. Jesse's sister's boyfriend comes up with a plan to stop the zombies after stopping at a meatpacking plant. They leave a trail of cow brains that lead to a power plant where the survivors intend to electrocute all the zombies. When the zombie horde arrives, Jesse is attacked by the zombified Billy, but Jesse drives him off by stabbing him with the screwdriver and then throws a switch, electrocuting all the other zombies. This was definitely aimed at a younger audience. It's kind of like an episode of Goosebumps, but with a lot less scares. And like Chud 2, which I talked about in the last episode, this really fucks up by focusing on slapstick light laughs instead of the scares. Also, for the most part, the zombie makeup is pretty fucking terrible. What is interesting to me, at least, is the fact that both Tom Matthews and James Caron, who are both in the first movie and return in this, are basically playing the same characters they did in the first movie, even though they're obviously different characters, but they're still pretty much the same, if you get what I mean. This sequel definitely isn't for everyone. It sure as hell wasn't for me. It also kind of set the tone for the shittiness of the last two sequels in the franchise that would follow after the much bigger success of Return of the Living Dead 3. IMDb gave it a 5 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes a 45%, Letterboxd a 2 out of 5, and I give it a 1.5 out of 5 just because one or two scenes did actually amuse me. I almost forgot, this had a $6.2 million budget and brought in $9.2 million at the box office. Next up on the shit list, 2006's nearly unwatchable shitfire of a movie, Creepshow 3. This was directed by the same two assholes that pissed all over George A. Romero's good name with the equally unwatchable Day of the Dead 2, Contagion. So if you've seen that piece of fucking shit, you should know to stay the fuck away from this, which pisses all over both Romero and Stephen King's names, as well as the first two Creepshow movies. The movie, if you can call this that, opens with the wraparound story, which, while in the first two movies, was a way to link all the stories together, in this one, it has all the characters from each story, basically interacting with each other. And that leads us into the first story, Alice. Alice is a stuck-up, cunty little bitch of a teenager who comes home one day and finds her dad fucking around with some kind of universal remote. When he presses one of the buttons on it, everyone in the family, except Alice, turns into a different ethnicity, while Alice turns into what is supposed to be her true form. The rest of Alice's family becomes horrified and disgusted at the sight of Alice's true form, and then the mad scientist who lives down the street arrives and uses another remote to turn Alice into a white rabbit. Victor, a character that doesn't appear until the third fucking story, makes a cameo in this. And this leads us to the next story, The Radio. A part-time security guard named Jerry buys a radio from a homeless dude to replace his old one that took a shit. However, this radio is very fucking odd as it starts having fucking conversations with Jerry, convincing him to start robbing and killing motherfuckers. After meeting up with the hooker, the radio tells Jerry to murder her as well, but Jerry refuses and then destroys the radio. However, right after Jerry does this, the hooker shoots and kills him, but then she is shot in the head herself by a pimp who had been told by another radio to do it. Alice's father, from the first story, who is apparently a detective, makes an appearance in this, as does Rachel, who is featured in the next story, Call Girl. A murderous call girl named Rachel is on her way to meet her new client, Victor, thinking that he will be an easy victim. But when she arrives at the house, the bodies of a family, all with their throats ripped out, greet her as she walks in the door. Not like greets her as in like get up and say, hey, hi, how you doing? That she just sees the bodies. Anyway, Rachel then chains Victor to a bed, stabs him in the chest, and then smothers him with the pillow. Then, like any good murderess, she goes to take a fucking shower. She keeps hearing a voice say, you kill me. She then goes back into the bedroom, takes a pillow off Victor's face, and sees that he has turned into a monstrous vampire. then he kills Rachel. And that's as far as I'm going to go with this steaming pile of shit. The final two stories are so bad they aren't even worth talking about. To be completely fucking honest, none of this movie is watchable, that is. But it's my job to talk about it so you don't waste precious moments of your life watching bullshit like this. This, quite honestly, might be the worst movie I've ever seen. And trust me when I say this, because I've seen a lot of bad, shitty horror movies, but this is definitely at the top of the list. As I mentioned earlier, this is the second franchise these two directors decided to piss all over and ruin. And it's honestly hard to believe that even they thought that this was going to be a good movie. And seeing as how most critics and even horror fans said the same thing and felt the same hate, anger, and disgust after watching this as I did, I'm not alone in this opinion. You wouldn't guess at all that this had a budget of fucking $3.5 million, because what the fuck did that money go to? Probably to line their own pockets, because it's evident it wasn't used anywhere in this piece of shit. IMDb gave it a 3 out of 10, a fucking 0% on Rotten Tomatoes, Letterboxd a 1 out of 5, and I give it, yep, you guessed it, a 0 out of 5. Which leads us to the highly disappointing 2002 film, Tales from the Crypt Presents Ritual.
This child's not gonna make it.
You don't want me to repeat my speech on the use of non-FDA-approved drugs and disastrous career consequences.
It's a chance I'll have to take. I realize that I can't practice medicine for the next 2 years, but there is a medical referral service. They're offering an overseas position. The patient lives in Jamaica. This is Wesley's new doctor.
Welcome to Wonderland, Al.
Why would my brother drag you all the way out here?
You see what I have? There is nothing that you can do anything about.
What is it that you think you have?
You wouldn't understand. My brother, he thinks someone is messing with his mind.
It's a sickness of that sort.
It's voodoo. Jamaican version. But don't worry, it only works if you believe it does.
When we were kids, we used to go to these ceremonies up in the hills, do you remember? I started to go back. I wasn't in control anymore.
Why don't you stop going?
Oh, because I can't. Oh, I could be dead tomorrow. You could be dead tonight.
It's going to take away the humanity of the man, the soul.
You sound like you're in love with him. It's like disco. Your head goes to a different place. You're sexy and fun, really, really loose.
Just run. They're more powerful than anything you want.
Your doctor is dead, so I'm getting you better.
Well, there are all kinds of ways of getting better.
In the darkest corner of the unknown.
You never told me that a woman felt slashed to ribbon.
I think that I killed those people.
The truth is everything you feel. Daniel LePain and Tim Curry.
I have to say that, like a lot of people, I am a fan of the 1970s Tales from the Crypt movie, the old Tales from the Crypt TV show that aired on HBO, and the other two Tales from the Crypt movies, Demon Knight and Bordello of Blood. The TV show was a big part of my childhood on the reruns, and, you know, it was something I thoroughly enjoyed. I was even excited when I heard that there was going to be a reboot of the TV show, but then that unfortunately never came to pass. However, having said all that, I was highly disappointed. And let down after this third and final movie version of the modern-day Tales from the Crypt. It opens with the typical Crypt Keeper intro, but this one is even shorter than usual, and it's probably not even a minute long, and I have to say, the old Crypt Keeper has definitely seen better days. In fact, this version of him looks like complete ass. The movie proper opens with Dr. Alice Dodgson who has just been fired from the hospital she works in due to her involvement in the death of a child patient. With nowhere else to go, she takes a job as a nurse in Jamaica, taking care of Wesley, a man who says he has encephalitis. Alice falls almost immediately in love with him, but she becomes afraid and paranoid that the two of them are being targeted by a voodoo cult. But she is assured by a local girl named Carol that as long as they mind their own business, the voodoo community will leave her alone. However, Carol is later revealed to be the source of some strange shit going on, as she is seeking revenge on Wesley because, well, it's kind of fucking weird and hard to explain, but it involves someone killing Carol's mother and her not getting her rightful inheritance, ? I don't fucking know, man. It's something like that. Anyway, Carol then attempts to paralyze Alice and turn her into a zombie, but only succeeds partially. Her plan backfires, and Carol herself is turned into a zombie. This was supposed to be based on the old classic film, I Walked with the Zombie, but this just sucks. It lacks everything that made the old Tales from the Crypt such fun, good stories, gore, and pitch black humor. All this movie is dull, boring, and incredibly slow-moving. In fact, the first time I ever saw this, I turned it off only a half hour into it due to boredom, never even tried to rewatch it till a week or two before this episode. I was actually able to sit all the way through that time, but it still bored the hell out of me. So, unless you're really curious, I definitely wouldn't recommend this. You know, go back and watch, you know, the old TV show or the other two Tales from the Crypt movies, Demon Knight and Bordello of Blood. Or even, watch the original 1970s fucking movie. It's tons and loads better than this piece of shit. The only thing this is good for is curing insomnia. IMDb gave it a 4 out of 10, Letterboxd a 2 out of 5, and I only gave it a half a star out of 5. Moving on, we come to 1991's Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare.
As a boy, he was always different. No one understood him.
You ready for it, boy?
It's time to take your medicine.
Thank you, sir.
No one could control him.
Go inside, honey.
But now, it's a new beginning. The beginning of the end for Freddy.
Every town has an Elm Street.
No! Screaming while the bus is in motion!
It's your mind to go for.
Saved the best for last.
Taking place many years after Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child, Freddy Krueger has once again returned and finally managed to kill off every single child and teenager in Springwood, except for one, who is only known as John Doe. While trying to escape Springwood, John encounters Freddy in an annoying amount of "Is it a dream or isn't it?" sequences, and then wakes up to find himself outside of Springwood. But due to hitting his head on a rock in his encounter with Freddy, he now has amnesia and is unable to remember what happened or who he is. Elsewhere, a stoner named Spencer, Carlos, who has been made deaf in one ear by his abusive mother, and Tracy, who was sexually abused by her own father, are three teens in a home for troubled teens that are planning to run away. The police find John wandering around town and bring him to that very same shelter, and John is put under the care of Dr. Maggie Burroughs. Maggie finds a newspaper article about Springwood in John's possessions, and in an attempt to cure his amnesia, decides that it's a good idea to take John back there to figure out what the fuck happened. The two start to head out towards Springwood, but then discover Carlos, Spencer, and Tracy have been hiding in the back of the van they took as part of the three's plan to escape. The five of them finally arrive in Springwood and find that all the adults are behaving increasingly strange, and that the town, as I said before, is completely devoid of anyone under the age of 20. While there, they discover that Freddy had a child, which John assumes is him, as he is the only teenager that Freddy spared. While there, Carlos and Spencer also both meet their untimely ends at the hands of Freddy after falling asleep, and Tracy also is almost killed but is saved when Maggie wakes her up. However, John, who went into the dream world with Tracy, is unable to wake up and is attacked by Freddy. Before he kills John, Freddy reveals that his child was a girl, and that the only reason he let John live was so that he could bring her to him. Before he dies, John wakes up and tells Maggie what Freddy told him. Tracy and Maggie then return to the teen shelter, only to discover nobody remembers John, Carlos, and Spencer, and act like they never even existed, except one employee named Doc, who claims that he can remember those three because he can control his dreams. Maggie later finds her adoption papers and finds that her given name is Catherine Krueger and that she is in fact Freddy's daughter. Doc then discovers that Freddy's powers come from dream demons, or as Freddy calls them, the dream people, and that he can be killed if he is brought into the real world. Maggie goes back into the dream world and, using a pair of 3D glasses, enters Freddy's mind. In a series of flashbacks, we are shown Freddy's childhood, where he is tormented by classmates, abused by his foster father, who Freddy in turn murders. And then we are shown Freddy's wife discovering his extracurricular activities and him murdering her right in front of Maggie when she was a child. Daddy and daughter then confront each other, and after a struggle, Maggie manages to pull Freddy into the real world. The two then engage in hand-to-hand combat. Enraged by all the things that Freddy has done and all the lives he's taken, Maggie tears off Freddy's clawed gloved hand and impales him through the stomach with it, nailing him into a support beam. Maggie then shoves a pipe bomb into his chest, it explodes, and it kills Freddy. The movie ends with Maggie smiling, confident that her father is finally dead. While this isn't the worst movie in the franchise, like I keep saying, it definitely isn't one of the best, and it definitely really isn't all that good. The biggest problem with this is that by this point in time, the filmmakers had really stopped giving a fuck about making this shit scary or even enjoyable. And everything is pretty much played for laughs. Everything that made Freddy scary in all the previous movies is gone in this. And he's pretty much a comedian throughout. Even the kills lack the scare factor. As a matter of fact, the whole thing pretty much plays out as a live-action Looney Tunes episode, complete with lame-ass sound effects. This also has a few lame-ass cameos that don't really add anything to the movie. Roseanne and Tom Arnold make an appearance as two parents in The Childless Springwood, and Alice Cooper also makes an appearance as Freddy's abusive foster father. IMDb gave it a 4 out of 10, a 20% on Rotten Tomatoes, Letterboxd a 2 out of 5, and I give it a 1.5 out of 5. And once again, I forgot, but this was made for somewhere between $9 and $11 million, and it grossed $34.9 million at the box office. And that finally brings us around to the final movie of today's episode, the truly terrible 2005 flick, Return of the Living Dead, Necropolis.
On July 3rd, 1984, an army canister was breached and released a deadly compound known as trioxin upon Louisville, Kentucky. What followed was a night of carnage that left thousands dead.
You're sure they're here?
They're here, my friend. But a better place to keep them safe.
The American government has nothing to do with this transaction.
How many do you want for your personal use?
All of them.
Now, the dead have returned. And this time...
You gotta see this.
It's a new generation.
It's a nursery.
Bioweapons section. We're gonna phase out our human subjects and replace them with this cloning program.
They're back from the grave.
The situation is now under control, and there is no threat to the surrounding community.
This one is truly fucking horrible, so I'm not going to spend too much time talking about the movie itself. Watch it to find out for yourself. If you don't believe me, you will walk away disappointed and hating yourself. I can almost guarantee you that. Set 10 years after the events of Return of the Living Dead 3... After one of their friends is badly injured in an accident and taken to a mysterious corporation instead of a hospital, a group of teens set out to rescue him, but end up accidentally releasing a horde of brain-hungry zombies. Much retardedness ensues. This has some fucking terrible grade Z directing, terrible fucking acting, and steals the main zombies directly from fucking Resident Evil Apocalypse. They look so similar, I'm actually surprised that there wasn't a fucking lawsuit involving copyright infringement. This was shot back-to-back with the even more fucking retarded and nigh-unwatchable Return of the Living Dead, Rave to the Grave, and unsurprisingly, both of these movies were made for the Sci-Fi Channel, which, as horror fans know, and those who watch this, the channel know, Sci-Fi originals aren't really that fucking great. They pretty much all fucking suck. This movie sucks so much, I didn't even bother looking up the monetary, facts or what anybody else thought about this. But, as you can probably guess, I also gave this one a 0 out of fucking 5. And that wraps it up for this episode. As always, you can contact me and drop me a line to say hi, what you think I'm doing, or how you think I'm doing on the show. If you want to suggest a movie, or if you have a movie you want me to just talk about, or any other kind of topic related to horror that you want me to talk about, email me at darksyde9034@gmail.com. My band, Raped by Wolves, also has another new album coming out. It should be dropping sometime next week, if not, you know, at some point this weekend. It will either be dropping this weekend or early next week. It's called Just When You Thought It Was Safe to Listen to Music Again. Again, that's by my band, Raped by Wolves, and it will be on Spotify and every other major music platform, as well as all my other music is on those as well. and I'm sorry for all the clearing of my throat in this episode. I keep getting shit in it, as you can probably tell, so I don't know what's going on with that, but yeah, that's why I've been clearing my throat so much, and I apologize for it. But anyway, that wraps it up for this episode. Tune in next week, where I'm not quite sure what I'm going to be talking about yet, but tune in to find out. This has been Tombs of Horror, and I'm your host, Dustin. I'll see you guys next week.